Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Welcome to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert. As you can tell, I am not Lori Siebert. I am Bill Henderson, also from Valley National Financial Advisors. I am guest hosting tonight with Chris Holland, another employee of Valley National, and we are happy to be here with you. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. Today is January 21st, 2026. The markets today closed up, the Dow closing at 49,077, the NASDAQ at 22,722, and the S&P at 6,875. Our topic tonight is a review of the markets for 2025 and a potential outlook for 2026. As I said, my name is Bill Henderson, and I am here along with Chris Holland. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, great to be here, Bill.
Glad to have you. Today, helping us in the studio are Bob and Cindy. They will take your calls and take your information and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without delay and we can talk without any confusion. We will discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. The number here is 610-758-8810. You can speak live on the air with us. Or if you're not comfortable speaking on air, you can give your question to Bob or Cindy, and they will bring it into the studio where Chris or I will try and do our best to answer it. If it's a specific question for Lori, we promise to get it to her, and she'll be able to answer it on our next show. Our email is www.yourfinancialchoices.com. Here's a quick bio on Chris and myself. Chris and I have been in the investment industry for over 30 years each, and we have specialized in bond or stock portfolio management and research. We both have advanced business degrees, but truthfully, our time on Wall Street or simply the street far outweighs a degree. We hope to have a lively discussion tonight about what happened in 2025, and we expect to go forward with what we think will be 2026. So, Chris, first question for you.
All right.
2025 was a banner year for virtually every asset class. Stocks had double-digit returns, bonds pulled in about 7%, and commodities like gold and silver were also hot. Tell me, how do you feel about 2025 and the results we saw?
Yeah, 2025, it turned out to be a very good year across asset classes. As far as the stock market goes specifically, I'd break it into two kind of big themes that drove the market last year. I'd say like the first half or maybe the first third of the year, it was all about tariffs and global trade, Liberation Day as it was known, and the impact that that was going to potentially have on global trade, corporate earnings. As many people can remember, back in April of last year, 2025, we had a pretty aggressive sell-off in the stock market. And at the same time, we saw some signals of the bond market that, you know, somewhat started to malfunction a little bit. It caused, you know, quite a bit of concern pretty quickly. But things stabilized, you know, after a period of time. Negotiations started to take place, and we saw some stabilization. Now, that didn't stop many big Wall Street firms from coming out with some pretty dire predictions, but we tried to kind of focus on the fundamentals of the businesses that we follow and just the trends of the broader economy. And I think that kind of led us to make some good choices. Now, the second half of the year, I think as many people would agree, it was all about the artificial intelligence theme in the stock market. We saw tons of positive press releases related to large investments that were being made. We saw earnings results from many of the big mega cap tech companies that were handily beating or exceeding expectations, and the guidance that was being provided for many of these companies It was very strong, and it just gave an indication that this AI theme is definitely here to stay. And it was definitely a driving force that, you know, propelled, you know, as many people would, you know, probably can recall the Magnificent Seven stocks. It was a powerful force that pushed those stocks up. But at the same time, later part of the year, we did start to see a little bit of broadening in the market. But I'd say those were kind of the two big themes. It was just good to see us kind of recover from that shock or that sense of fear that kind of captured the market early in the year.
Yeah, we have a lot to talk about tonight because I really want to talk about the economy. As people know in listening to the show or us being on previously or reading any of our commentary, I really believe the economy can point to the future of where the markets are going. And we had a great year last year. I mean, the economy really exploded, especially after the so-called Liberation Day when we did take a little bit of a bath on the markets, but they all came back by the end of the year. So I mentioned the U.S. economy, it's been a real juggernaut. If you look, the third quarter, we saw 4.4% GDP return. That's pretty amazing. So GDP is gross
domestic product.
Thank you. No, gross domestic product.
That's okay.
Yeah, I wanted to say gross national product, but it hasn't been that for a long time. And some are predicting 5% in the fourth quarter of 2025, and even that high again in 26. What are your thoughts on the economy? And I know you mentioned the AI trade, and I plan to talk about that a little bit later on, but we've yet to see real impact in earnings or real impact in, you know, changes in corporate behavior from AI. All we've done is spent trillions of dollars on it, you know, but how are you seeing that particularly impacting the economy? And then, you know, are you concerned going forward in 26, or do you think it's going to be a headwind or a tailwind?
Yeah, as far as like AI goes, can't agree with you more. I know the theme has been focused on the companies that are making or enabling artificial intelligence. And we need to see this kind of handoff from those companies to corporate America starting to use the tools and resources in that technology to hopefully just improve their business, you know, allow them to, bring new products, new services to market, that sort of thing.
So, yeah, and it's really important to point out the strength in the labor market. You know, we have had unbelievable growth in employment. We've had lowering unemployment claims, and the unemployment rate remains at 4.1%. You know, we've had kind of this thing where you read about, it's called no hire, no fire, where corporations are loath to fire because they may not be able to, yep, to get that person back. But they're also nervous to hire because hiring somebody means you're committed to paying that salary for ongoing time. I think if there's going to be a break in the labor market this year, which I think it's going to break to the positive, we're going to see a change in that no hire, no fire, and eventually people are going to have to start bringing on people. And I know people are concerned that the AI impact is going to be removing people from the workforce, but if we've seen anything over the last, 10 or 20 years, technology has actually increased the labor market. It's made people more productive. And we're seeing that in manufacturing. We're seeing that in services as well. So this next question, corporate America seems to feel pretty good right now. They're making a lot of money. Profits are strong. What is your outlook for earnings for 2026? And are you concerned that the big spend on AI has made such an impact that we're going to see sort of a flattening in earnings?
Yeah, I think the outlook is looking very good for earnings growth for the S&P 500 for 2026. We've gotten some indications of that. Q4 earnings season did get underway in the last week or two. So we've gotten some early reads from some pretty big companies about not just how they closed out 2025, but how they're feeling about 2026. And so far, all signals look pretty good that we should see double-digit earnings growth next year, which is an indicator of, you know, a pretty healthy macroeconomic backdrop.
Yeah, double-digit earnings, that's something that, as you said, is a big indicator of where things could be going. We're going to take our first break, and when we come back, we're going to continue to dig into some of these topics, especially our outlook further into 2026.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thank you to all of WDIY's generous sustaining members. Setting up an automatic monthly gift on your credit card is the easiest way to support your listening and ensure WDIY remains a strong and thriving public resource. Become a sustaining member of WDIY today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit WDIY.org. Thank you for your support.
This is Bill Henderson in for Lori Siebert, along with my guest host tonight, Chris Holland. We are both from Valley National Financial Advisors. And remember, we are taking your calls live tonight in the studio. We can be reached at 610-758-8810. We welcome your calls. So, Chris, let's dig right back into this.
So, Bill, let me jump in and ask maybe a quick question here. So we're about 3 weeks into 2026. What are some themes you're kind of seeing out there in the marketplace right now that, you know, investors are kind of talking about?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you know, we write about it a lot. We write about the noise in the markets. And I know I've talked to Lori about this. Avoid the noise. Ignore it. Don't worry about that. Invest for the long term. We have had quite the amount of noise in the first 3 weeks of the year here, and especially today. I mean, President Trump was over in Davos, Switzerland at the big event over there. And in that time period, the market went from being, you know, flat and down yesterday to big up today, just from a couple of words during a speech about Greenland and how it might be a peaceful, you know, agreement.
Resolution,
to use the land,
yeah.
Peaceful resolution, right. I think this year, the Mag 7 is going to be important again. That's the Magnificent 7, the big tech stocks that did a lot. But I think government intervention this year could be pretty important. We've heard President Trump mention housing affordability. So that has been a big, big issue since the pandemic, where with mortgage rates higher than they have been, prices going up, you know, affordability for millennials and those even younger than millennials is getting really hard. I think, you know, they've mentioned ways to, you know, they're buying Freddie and Fannie Mac securities, which potentially could bring down mortgage rates. I believe the average 30-year mortgage rate is about 6.605, something like that. If we get that below 6%, I think that's going to be a big sort of trigger for people to start, okay, I could deal with a 5.5% mortgage.
Yep.
So that's one thing. Also, the administration has mentioned a cap on credit card rates. I mean, if you carry a balance on a credit card, that's probably a mistake, but I know people have to do it. And when they're 27 and 25 and 35% rates on credit cards, that's a big, very expensive way to borrow money. Even if you were to put some fictitious cap on credit cards, let's just pull 10%, banks are still making money. So that could potentially happen, although it's really tough for the president to impose something like that on banks by themselves. I think Congress would have to get involved. But we have seen, lastly, you know, restrictions on defense companies, no dividends, salary caps and things where he wants to see, look, if you're going to give big dividends out, I want to see that you're making investments in our defense industry. So I think a big theme this year is going to be to what extent the government is going to intervene in the economy, what extent Wall Street will like it or they won't like it.
Yeah, definitely really powerful trends there. You know, absolutely, I agree.
So, big question for you here.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's not that big.
Okay.
So, small cap stocks, right? So, large caps are your mega, you know, your Metas, your Amazons, your Apple. Small caps are the lesser type, smaller stocks. Do we think they've surged this year 8% already, up 8%, a big move. Why do you think that's the case? Do you think it's sustainable? And is there anything like under the hood of this movement that we should be worried about?
Yeah, a great question. You know, small caps, if you kind of look back over the last, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, they've struggled. It's been like an asset class within equities that really hasn't kept up really with the larger cap names. And I think there's a couple reasons why. You know, you and I have talked about a metric that gets published maybe once a quarter, and it just kind of shows what percentage of the Russell 2000, and just for so people understand, the Russell 2000 is an index that tracks the smallest 2000 roughly, you know, market cap names within the larger Russell index. And just a percentage of those companies that are unprofitable, it's a trend higher. Roughly 40% of companies that are categorized as small cap are unprofitable. And that's been a kind of like a slow grind higher. You know, something else to think about is, you know, we've seen this very strong growth in the private equity category, lots of dollars flowing in there. And I think that creates a dynamic where smaller companies that are not public, they can stay private for much, much longer. And I think that just makes, creates a scenario where, you know, we've seen some of this. SpaceX, it started out as a very small business a decade ago. Now there's rumors that it could eventually go public with this monstrous potential $1 trillion market cap. So it seems like the best companies are staying private longer. When they do go public, they kind of hopscotch over this small cap category. They go public in the mid cap or the large cap space. And then just last thing I want to mention, The surge we've seen year to date, up 8%, is really significant, because think about that versus like a S&P 500 that's essentially flat year to date. I've looked at some of the companies that are kind of leading the charge there in the Russell 2000. And if you take a close look at it, they're speculative names, they're riskier names, they're companies that are not profitable yet, that they're very early in their you know, their stages of growth. So it kind of keeps us a little bit more cautious there. You know, those are small cap businesses are typically, they're not as sturdy, they're not as strong. If the economy does wobble, or if things do seem a little bit uncertain, they don't have like the customer base. You know, they lose a couple customers, their businesses get impacted very quickly. So it's great to see that, you know, we've seen this, you know, this surge higher year to date, but I'd be a little bit cautious about chasing it, you know, just for the reasons I kind of laid out there.
Yeah. I love your example of SpaceX. If we went back, say, 5 years and SpaceX wanted to go public, it would have gone public as a small cap, you know, a company not worth a lot of money. Let's go public. We'll come out of the share price, you know, $11 or $12. Now, if and when SpaceX goes public, and they're talking about it this year, meaning Musk is thinking he really wants to bring this company public, it's going, not to use a boring metaphor here, but it's going to explode, you know, into the market and really skip right over, you know, small, mid. It'll probably go right to large at its outset, at the IPO, which is a pretty phenomenal thing. And Musk's thought around this is, I need the money to expand his next big idea, which is to take servers, put them into space, and use the sun to power them. I read about that. That is just something that, you know, you or I don't sit around and think about this idea, but a lot of people, you know, a guy like Musk is saying, you know, how can I make keeping data cheaper, freer, and, you know, more compact? And you shoot these things into space, let the sun power them. That's it's amazing.
It's just tough to get your head around some of that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, so we talked a little briefly about, you know, broadening. Could you explain when people say the market is broadening out? And our next, our, you know, like when it's broadening from just, you know, the sort of 7 or 10 large cap, mega cap stocks to what it means to broaden out beyond that.
So the easy way to explain it is, you know, everyone talks about the Mag 7. These are, you know, seven of the largest market cap names that comprise the largest percentage typically of, say, like the S&P 500. They were the driving force for the market in 2025. A lot of people would pull out metrics and say, well, how much would the S&P have been up in 2025 if NVIDIA wasn't in the index? Or what about if Palantir or maybe, you know, some of these other high flyers were in the index? But if you look at just kind of what we're seeing year to date, the 493, so that's the other names in the S&P 500, you know, excluding the Mag 7, you've seen that particular group of stocks, you know, vastly outperforming the Mag 7 year to date. So it just implies that we're seeing some earnings growth, some optimistic outlooks being delivered outside of technology. So think about industrial companies, healthcare companies, even some financial businesses are you know, saying things that are pretty, you know, optimistic about the future. It gets people interested in their businesses and you know, investing.
So real quick before our next break, do you agree that a broadening out of the market is healthy?
Absolutely.
Okay, I do too. I think concentrating in these top seven stocks, bad, spreading it out among a bunch of different companies and industries is a good thing for the market and shows you, you know, healthy things can happen. So we're going to go to our next break and we will be back with a continuing discussion with Chris Holland. And my name is Bill Henderson.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Hello and welcome back to Your Financial Choices. I'm your guest host tonight, Bill Henderson, along with Chris Holland. Both of us are from Valley National Financial Advisors. And a reminder, the phone number to call in for your questions tonight is 610-758-8810. So, Chris, we left with a discussion of the broadening out of the markets and how you and I both believe that that's a good thing. I really think concentrated markets are bad. Broad, healthy markets are much better. And I think more investors benefit from a broadening in market returns than, you know, someone owning just the top 10. And then there's other people that don't own those. And I think it's imbalanced. So I think we're in a good place as we start to see different returns beyond just a few.
Definitely. I agree. So let me jump in here. Let me ask you a quick question, Bill.
Okay.
So the one big, beautiful bill that gets lots of attention, can you maybe just talk about that a little bit and what it could mean for in practice for investors, for individuals, for corporations? I know there's a lot of noise in the market. There's a lot of moving pieces. But I think this is important that people, you know, try to kind of understand how it could impact their current situation here in 2026.
Sure. So, you know, the one big beautiful bill amendment is going to have a pretty big impact on things. Let's start with the first thing that should impact a lot of Americans, the tax cuts. And these are the tax cuts from the original Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. That was a temporary thing. They're making that permanent. So tax cuts that were already in place are now going to remain and be permanent. They are increasing the SALT deduction. So SALT stands for state and local taxes. That the max on that deduction was $10,000. It's going up to $40,000. So you don't
have
to,
big.
That's really a big move. There's also the Trump savings accounts. This is the new Trump accounts they're talking about. So any child born last year, 2025 and 2026, so that means I have a new niece, Frankie, and a new niece, Margaret. Both of them are going to be able to have new Trump accounts. And then I have a soon-to-be-born granddaughter who will be born this year who will also be able to have a Trump account.
That's exciting.
That's exciting. When you think about dropping $1,000 into a brand-new baby's account and seeing that grow between 0 and 65 years old, and if you want to be able to use it for anything, education or investment, it's phenomenal. An unbelievable opportunity.
Purchase of a first home, yeah.
Yeah, like a lot of things. That alone is such a great, you know, change. Like, okay, let's force investment at a young age. As you know, and we've talked about this together, we talk about it with Lori, it's very big. Also in the One Big Beautiful Bill Amendment, Act, I'm sorry, is some TIPS and some Social Security will be tax-free. That's you know, there's limits on that, income limits, but it's certainly going to impact some people. CapEx, so capital expenditures by corporations. Before, you used to have to spread out the deductibility of that CapEx over several years. Now, if you buy something this year, you deduct the entire cost 1 year. So that's going to have a huge impact on earnings this year. And then another sort of unique twist here is that interest on loans for cars assembled in the U.S. So there's a few definitions there. You know, what does it mean to be assembled in the U.S.? It's in there. It's buried in the bill. But before, if you borrowed money to buy a car, that interest was not deductible. It was considered a consumer loan, like a credit card debt, not deductible. In this case, cars assembled in the U.S. and you borrow for it, that interest will be deductible. So I think there's a lot of other things in there, but those are some of the big ones that I really think were worth pointing out and specific to impacting a wide range of Americans. SALT deductions impact everyone. Interest for car loans impact some. No taxes on TIPS or Social Security or other, and then the Trump accounts. I think there's a lot of things in this bill where You want to talk about a tailwind for 2026.
Oh, I was just going to say tailwind. You stole it from me.
I'm sorry. You know, you're sitting over there. I talked right through that one. So how about you? I mean, on this same bill, what did I miss that I would specifically, the CapEx thing is huge for earnings and for, you know, we see a growth in earnings that's going to impact a lot. And I think that's going to help equity prices.
Yeah, I just think like the combination of everything you just listed, they all seem like small pieces. But when you combine that together and you also combine it with, you know, the view that a lot of people hold that, yes, in 2026, we are likely to get some interest rate cuts from the Federal Reserve. There's always constant debate. When is it going to happen? Are we going to get the next cut in January? Is it more likely to come a few months later? That's really tough to gauge. And I know you and I have lots of debates about that. But that also, if we're just kind of talking about that idea of tailwinds, I think we kind of get this monetary policy tailwind that it gets lost in the daily noise oftentimes. Like today, the focus point was on what's being communicated from the Davos, conference and what does it mean for geopolitics. But these are important things that I think when you combine monetary policy, the one big beautiful bill, and the impact that could have, those all together, you know, that's kind of creating this really nice tailwind that hopefully should, you know, add some nice juice to the economy in 2026.
Yeah. And you've mentioned quite a number of the tailwinds that you and I talk about in the office a lot. I really think we continue to hammer away at deregulation. You know, and Trump mentioned it today, President Trump, in his speech at Davos, that one of the things he's cut back on all the federal regulations. So, you know, if you think about it, you're trying to start a new company and now you have, you know, piles and piles of documents you have to fill out and this federal oversight, they're working really hard to cut down on that. And that's, you know, a tailwind that nobody ever, when do people talk about that? They certainly talk about the tailwinds you mentioned, you know, lower interest rates, but you know, deregulation is a huge tailwind.
And I think that also applies to, you know, when we think about the situation we're in the housing market right now, you know, it's a supply problem. It's very tough for home builders to get approval and, you know, just find land, develop it, get it on the market quickly. There's lots and lots of hurdles that they have to jump over. So that idea of just less regulation in that process hopefully will bring about, you know, maybe just some better conditions in the housing market. I know we've seen some of those stocks, housing related stocks and all the derivative plays off of that perform pretty well year to date. Part of that, I think, is because, you know, President Trump is looking in this general direction saying, we have a problem with housing. Let's see if we can just improve the conditions there a little bit. I know a lot's been floated around. You touched on a couple before, but you know, if we just see some slight improvement, like you mentioned, that 6% threshold, just that psychological barrier of once we break that threshold and mortgage companies could say, hey, it's got a 5 handle on it now, and maybe we see some relief in some other areas, maybe we, you know, that becomes a new source of growth in the economy, just this resurgence in housing activity and people, you know, being comfortable saying like, hey, I've saved, you know, some good money, I could put a down payment down, and there's actually some supply out there to go take a look at.
Yeah, I think we can talk about housing a lot in the second half of the show. I really believe that there's still a supply problem. You know, you could mention interest rates, you could mention affordability, you could mention down payment numbers, but we are still 1.5 million units short of housing. I'm sorry, 2 million units short. And the most we've ever really built since, say, the 50s is 1.5 million units a year. So we still have that problem to deal with. And we can maybe talk about some of the other implications coming that I think could have more positive factors on the housing market going forward. But I think there too, if we can get some of the regulation lifted on building and lower interest rates, those two things alone should help a little bit to free up, you know, the sort of affordability question that we've continued to have. So let's real quick, well, we only got about 30 seconds before the break. But
maybe just one thing to add to that, we can maybe talk about this a little bit more after the break, is just the idea that many homeowners have a lot of equity built up in their house. So that's an opportunity. If we can get some of that to unlock, that could be a real boost to the consumer's condition right now.
That's a great point. That's a lot of money sitting there waiting for
that. It is. It's idle money.
So we will be right back.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thank you and welcome back to the show. A reminder, the call-in number is 610-758-8810. We hope to hear from you. Give us a call if you have a question. So, Chris, we left right before that about the break talking about housing. Go into that just a little bit more.
Sure.
About the massive amounts of equity and what that really means, you know, what we can do there.
Yeah. This actually kind of came to my attention. I was listening to Home Depot's earnings conference call, and this was probably a quarter or two back. And as you can imagine, because the housing market's been in, you know, a bit of a slump or just kind of like a soft spot here for the last few years, there's a lot of attention being paid to, like, what are they seeing? What are their expectations for the future? And that's kind of where this whole idea of, like, the amount of equity that the average homeowner has locked in their house. And if we do get lower rates, the expectation from companies like Lowe's, Home Depot, even like Lennox, some of the companies that build the HVAC systems that are used in homes, like, that they would anticipate a surge in activity. Because right now, you know, with rates where they are, the math just gets a little bit challenging for a person who's considering taking a loan out, putting an addition on a house, putting in like a beautiful backyard swimming pool. As rates come down, you know, those decisions get a little bit easier. So we've just kind of heard some kind of bits and pieces from corporate leaders just kind of indicating that they're anxious. They're a little bit excited to see, what the consumer is going to do if they can unlock some of that equity that's in their homes.
And that will go towards your earlier comment about the broadening of the market beyond.
Gets us away from tech a little
exactly,
bit. Something else to, you know, get excited about or just be optimistic about. And it'd be great to see some of the big home builders start to, beat earnings handily, get excited about, traffic trends and order volume, that sort of thing. So we'd love to see that.
Yeah, the same with the Home Depots and the Lowe's of the world.
Sure.
Having people improve their homes with home equity loans. So let's pivot a little bit here. We've talked about a lot. We haven't talked about inflation. I mentioned it earlier. We're at 2.7% right now. You know, it was as high as 9. Are we past the inflation bug? And is there one? I'm setting you up here because I think I know the answer. I want you to say. Is there one piece in the inflation picture that's still out there and is still coming down a lot? That is really going to have an impact on prices of everything.
You really set that up nice, Bill. I would say the key piece that I think a lot of people are paying attention to when it comes to inflation is the price of oil. And that has been trending lower. There's been a lot of talk out of Washington, out of President Trump, about increasing the supply in the marketplace. You know, more supply, demand stays roughly the same. That should bring prices down a little bit. And that's, if the trend continues, I think we saw a little blip higher last week. There was a little bit of concern around what was going on over in Iraq. So, we saw oil go up a couple dollars, but that concern has kind of, subsided a little bit. But the trend lower, if you kind of look at a 2 or 3 year chart, it's pretty impressive to see that, prices are coming down. Oil filters into many different parts of the economy. If we keep that low, it's definitely going to help the inflation picture.
Yeah, thank you. I agree with that. And we shared a chart today in the office about the U.S. share, the United States share of global oil production. It is right now at 20%. The U.S. share of global oil is at 20%. Saudi Arabia, everybody considers them the big oil powerhouse, 10%. Venezuela, who has been offline for a while, coming back online, is only at 2%. So Venezuela coming back online, we're growing our oil production. It's going to continue to come down, and that's going to have a really huge continued impact on oil prices, which I think is the last piece of the inflation picture that's going to put that away forever.
I know there's been some talk I saw some comments made about the folks in Washington would love to see oil get to a 4 handle on it. So that'd be somewhere in the $40, between 40 and 50. That would be great to see. And I think it would definitely, be a welcome change to people's pocketbooks.
All right, so we do have a caller on the line from Williston, Vermont. Owen, can you hear us?
Hello?
Yep.
Yes, I can.
Okay, go ahead.
I was just wondering if there was any specific oil companies that might be on your radar since the, you know, I guess the change in Venezuela. And then on top of that, your thoughts on Venezuela potentially becoming an emerging market if enough foreign oil companies, you know, resurrect the oil infrastructure in Venezuela.
Great. Thank you for the question.
Yeah, that's a terrific question. As far as just like the oil companies that could potentially be beneficiaries of, you know, just unlocking some of that supply in Venezuela, I would just focus, you know, or just maybe some businesses you want to read into, learn a little bit more about, focus on like the industry leaders there. So that'd be like ExxonMobil and Chevron. I know those are kind of simple answers. But that would be where I would spend my time trying to just learn a little bit more about, you know, their businesses and the impact it can have. Now, beyond that, you can even look at companies like Halliburton. Like these are some of the companies that provide some of the engineering, the equipment that goes into extracting energy from the earth. And then just to follow up, the last point you made is really interesting because I brought this up, and internally at our firm just recently. I know with what's gone on in Venezuela, you know, it's created a lot of volatility, a lot of uncertainty. But one small thing that was really interesting is that Venezuela, they do have a very small stock market down there. And since, you know, leadership has changed in Venezuela, their stock market has doubled. So, yes, it's up over 100% in about a 2-week time span. Yes, their stock market is very small. But if you just kind of think, as Bill mentioned earlier, the amount of oil reserves they're sitting on, and if they can potentially unlock that, what is it going to mean for their broader economy? And then you just, it's a really interesting idea to just think about. Venezuela is not even considered an emerging market right now, because we did some quick research just to understand. Of course, like our curiosity got the best of us. Hey, is there a Venezuela ETF? There is not. There is a company that is trying to launch one. But just it just makes people curious about where does Venezuela fit in as far as emerging markets? Can emerging market portfolio managers or mutual fund managers, is that an opportunity they're probably looking at in the future? I would bet they are. It's still very early in the story, but it is just something I would absolutely keep a close eye on.
That's a really great. Thank you, Owen.
That was a great question.
You bring a really great point about Venezuela. You know, they used to be a prosperous country, and before Chavez and Maduro, that basically destroyed the country. You know, with the change in administration, freedom for the people, the ability to grow, the ability to prosper, the ability to actually, you know, become a country again, there's great opportunity, but there's also continued risk. I mean, these things always have great, you know, they start out great. Let's just see how it continues. And it's always going to be, you know, right on the cusp of risky, but I think it shows the fact that the stock market has doubled. It shows the potential for prosperity when you add in a little bit of freedom and a little bit of stability to the government.
One thing to mention is just their stock market, as I said, is very, very small. It is only $2 billion. Every single company in their index, the total is $2 billion. So it is just minuscule. So, and also one thing to mention is that Venezuela has the highest inflation rate on the planet. So they've got a lot of work to do to try to kind of stabilize their economy. I think people are placing some, you know, some bets on just the long, long-term potential, but still a lot of work to be done there. But it's good to see they're headed in a better direction, I think.
Yeah, we have a lot of single companies that have bigger market cap.
We do. That wouldn't even classify as a small cap, actually, to be honest.
I still think, you know, progress is progress.
Yeah.
You know, and no matter how small, and I'm looking forward to see what happens with that country over the longer term here. So what I want to talk about now is the so-called K-shaped economy. So the listeners out there, you have to visualize the letter K. And on the right side is the line. And then on the left side is a line. Then going up to the right is one part of the letter, and down to the right is another part of the letter. So they've talked about the K-shaped economy, meaning greater income people are having the benefit of the upward sloping part of the K, and lesser income people are having the downward slope of the K. Are there things in 2026, specifically maybe even in the One Big Beautiful Bill amendment, that are going to help the lower part of the K have a better recovery? Because I think it's going to continue on the wealthier side to prosper. They're investing, they're homeowners, they have assets in the stock market. But we really need to see everybody benefit. Broadening in the stock market, broadening in incomes, broadening in prosperity, not just, you know, a few. So do you think there's things coming in 26 that could help the other part of the K-shaped economy?
Yeah. I think, you know, we saw a lot of announcements in 2025 about foreign countries that are making significant investments in the United States. And I think that's kind of part of this broader theme to bring back manufacturing of you know, the critical products, you know, that are important to our economy. And I think that will create jobs. And also, like something you mentioned earlier, you know, this push from Washington to at least try to maybe put some caps on, you know, the interest rates that are being charged on credit cards. It might meet some challenges. It might be tricky to get through, but just some small improvements there could kind of, you know, just take some pressure off that lower end consumer, allow them to kind of participate in what is otherwise a pretty healthy economy.
Yeah, I think absolutely. When you know, things like rent, electricity, food, transportation, the sort of necessities take a bigger chunk of salaries on you know, the middle to lower income segment. And, you know, as opposed to folks with a lot of investments, it's not a big of an opportunity. But I think costs are coming down. And I think overall, you know, hopefully everyone will be able to benefit going forward. So let's, you know, pivot a little bit more. One thing we talk about a lot in the office is sort of global tensions, you know, things that worry you and me collectively beyond the United States. We're super fortunate here in the U.S. to have, whether you are a Republican or a Democrat or an independent, we've had stability of government for, this is our 250th year. That's a big deal. A lot of places in the world do not have that. You look at Iran, you look at, you know, China, Venezuela, names you've mentioned. What worries you? And you can ask me the same question. I know I'm continuing to ask you the questions. But what worries you globally out there that you think, is there a solution to some of the, especially the Russia-Ukraine war? Do you think there's going to be a resolution to things like that this year? I mean, that war's going on 4 years. That's a really long time.
Yeah, and you always kind of mention, I think, that the fact about, you know, just a potential conflict like that. Once it kind of breaches that 1 year mark for a conflict or a war of that sort, it has the potential to go for a very long time. So it's sad, but I feel like, you know, the market, a lot of times the news media, you kind of become numb to it. It's this horrible situation on the other side of the world, but you know, it's something that, you know, kind of gets pushed to the background a little bit. As far as just like, you know, geopolitics, you know, I know we're close to a break here, but we could talk about it more. But definitely it's a factor that's top of mind. I think there was a survey that I believe maybe Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley did. They run some great surveys at the conferences they run, and they ask professional and, you know, investment managers, hey, what's top of mind as far as risks that you see out there for 2026? Number one on the list, geopolitics for 2026.
Yeah, I agree. That the thing about that is it's so unpredictable, you know, so you and I could look at markets and say, okay, we think we know what's going to happen, but it's tough with geopolitics. So we're going into our next break, and we will be right back after the break. Thank you.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to Your Financial Choices. Tonight, I am your guest host, Bill Henderson, along with Chris Holland, both of us from Valley National Financial Advisors. The number for call-in for your questions is 610-758-8810. Thank you. Chris, here we are. We're back. So I think we both mentioned this idea of the broadening out, and we talked about the economy. I know we shared a chart today, again, about when the economy is growing, equity markets tend to do well. Do you agree with that? And if so, why do you think that's the case? It's pretty much, it's a simpler question, but I think sometimes the correlation between those two things is not given enough importance in the markets. And I think it is important.
Yeah, I think the simplistic way to think about it is if the economy is growing, it's more than likely that corporate America is going to be able to grow their earnings. And earnings is like the key metric that investors pay attention to when they're trying to decide, you know, should I invest in Microsoft as an example? Well, if they're going to continue to grow their earnings, the value of the business is going to continue to increase. You know, that's the primary metric that you hear investors pay attention to. And, you know, just very simple.
So, yes, I agree and think that a growing U.S. is also really good, you know, sort of globally, right? If we're in good shape, we're expanding, we're buying, we're huge importers, even though, you know, Trump would put tariffs on everything and then he takes them off the next day or puts them back on the next day. Doesn't matter. We buy a lot of the world's goods and services, which I think if we're growing, expanding, and making a lot of money as a country, that's helping a lot of other countries.
Yeah, the U.S. consumer is like a super powerful, you know, global force. If the U.S. consumer is spending, feels, you know, healthy about the outlook for their personal situation, their personal wealth, they're going to continue to spend. And that's going to improve the situation for more than just the U.S., but just, you know, improve the situation for countries around the world.
Yeah, I'm always shocked to see the number of international travelers, you know, Americans going abroad. And they're not going abroad to not spend money. They're going to spend money. So I think, again, people are making money. They're spending. Spending's good for the economy no matter what. We're a consumer-based economy. If Lori were here, she would know that because we've parroted that a lot. 70 to 75% of the U.S. economy is the consumer. If the consumer's working, which we know the vast majority of people are because the unemployment rate's only 4.4%, they're working, they're spending, and that's keeping the economy going. So back a little bit here, let's talk a little bit more about geopolitics. We have not talked about China, and I kind of have a big personal interest in China. I have some relatives over in that part of the world, specifically in Taiwan. As you know, Taiwan's a bit of a hot spot with Xi Jinping and whether or not they want to expand it and the nine-dash line, things like that. What do you think? Do you think China is happy in its place or are they going to continue to sort of saber rattle and grow?
I think it's the latter. You know, they're very interested in becoming, you know, the leading economy on our planet. They're very aggressive. You and I talk often about how quickly they are advancing in certain areas, just as electric vehicles. You and I talk about BYD, Boyd, as, you know, this powerful electric vehicle manufacturer that some people claim is their vehicles are far better than Tesla, much more affordable, higher quality. They're selling very strong outside the U.S. Yeah, I think their ambitions are to, you know, continue to just add fuel to their economy and just grow at the, you know, fastest pace they can.
Yeah. Your point on the Chinese EVs is incredible. If you go on YouTube and just, you know, search BYD cars and you will see their EVs are spectacular. And Europe has just imposed import restrictions because they were coming in so many so fast. There's an article today in Bloomberg. They're looking to open 2,000 EV dealerships in Europe this year.
That's a huge number.
There's only 600 right now. They want to open another 2,000. I mean, if that's the case, Europe's car industry, so Audi, BMW, Mercedes-Benz, VW, and I guess French might have a car or two, they're in big trouble unless they figure out a way to really quick ramp up on good electric vehicles. And I think that's a big concern for the U.S. As you noticed, they're not allowed to be sold here.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
For whatever reason. Probably the auto industry has a couple of good lobbyists, but that's something we need to talk about or think about for sure. And I agree with you that China's ambitions go, you know, well beyond what people just think what is sort of in the paper. And recently they came out with their growth numbers and it was still big and their export numbers were still high, if you can believe them. It's so by the U.S. cutting back, it hasn't changed, but that's because they are expanding. They're expanding in Africa and they're expanding in South America. My one, a point that I made recently, and I sent that article around to everybody that was in the New York Times or the Journal about the move that President Trump did in Venezuela. It looked like, okay, I'm taking out Maduro, I'm putting in the person that's second in command, you know, what's the real impact? But the real impact also was to say, China, you're not in charge of this area right now, we are. And that put up a big roadblock that was sort of behind the scenes. And I think that's a very sort of big geopolitical chess move that happened that was sort of not talked about.
Yeah, it was kind of in the background, tucked away.
Yeah.
Very big deal.
Yep. So we have about 10 minutes left. I want to really spend that on, you know, some predictions for the year. You know, things that you think. First, let's start with, we'll each do a concern, you know, a concern that you have for the year that you hope gets resolved. And then I'll see if I can come up with one.
Yeah, I'd say like top of the list for me as far as concerns for 2026. You know, we talk constantly about this artificial intelligence theme. It's a driving force for the economy. It's a driving force for the market. We're going to start to get some earnings results from some of the big mega cap tech companies. And I know last year there was just extreme focus on the capital expenditures from these companies. I think the belief was as long as Microsoft and Meta, which is Facebook, and Apple, and some of these, even Amazon, as long as they're spending tens of billions of dollars, they're going to be buying more chips, they're going to be buying more servers, they're going to need more data centers. And just the belief that if these large mega cap companies, if they're investing, that powerful theme is intact. But I guess as far as my concern goes, I'm always interested, like you mentioned earlier, looking for data points related to, you know, return on investment. Are the companies that are embracing AI and they're deploying it in their businesses, are they getting a good return on it? It's a pretty expensive technology to kind of deploy. I know that the average person, you know, probably may use ChatGPT or Gemini, that's Google's AI tool. But beyond that, the real money or the earnings potential comes from, you know, the opportunity to deploy those in a more corporate setting. And, you know, we need to see that take place. If we start to hear comments from some companies like, hey, we're going to pause our CapEx spending, or we're going to delay a couple projects. If the belief starts to turn a little bit that, hey, there is potential there, but it's going to take much longer than we think, that could throw a pretty big scare into the market. So we're constantly, at least I know you and I, we're constantly looking at survey data, trying to get a glimpse into make sure that you know, CFOs, the people in charge of setting the budgets for 2026, 2027, they still feel really good, really optimistic. So far, that's the case. We heard earnings results from Taiwan Semiconductor last week, which was a pretty good indication. They feel very good about the outlook. So, you know, we just have to keep a very close eye on that.
Yeah. That's great. Something that worries me, we've talked about government regulation, monetary policy, you know, basically the one big beautiful bill amendment, all positive, all tailwinds. If there's a headwind out there, it's sort of this continued, you know, a little bit of drastic uncertainty. So I know the Supreme Court has to eventually rule on the tariffs. Remember when Liberation Day and the tariffs were announced, 75% on this country, 50 on that country.
Big numbers.
Right. Then they all came down 5% and 6%. And then we worked our way through it, and nobody sort of cares anymore. And the market got its footing and, you know, rallied after that.
And we're collecting a lot of tariff revenue every month.
Yes. What worries me is no matter how the Supreme Court is going to rule, it's not going to be a good outcome. Someone's going to hate it, and the markets will react violently. Like, okay, tariffs are allowed. Oh, my God, he's going to raise them really high. Tariffs aren't allowed. That means they all come out. Now we have to refactor everything. That type of uncertainty, and you know, again, with Lori, I always talk about uncertainty is the worst thing for our markets. You saw the VIX spike yesterday. The VIX, yep, is the volatility index. It spiked. I bet you went down today because it changed a little bit. So government sort of change one way or the other is something that is really a potential headwind for me that I'm going to continue to look at. I love reading about geopolitics. That's probably the most important thing I start my day with, looking at things, you know, what's going on out there beyond the U.S. The U.S. is pretty stable most of the time. So geopolitical problems in the U.S., that's not going to be good for anybody. So we really have to pay attention to that. And I think that's one thing that could impact markets negatively. Another potential, we've been in a three-year bull market. We've had some pullbacks. They've been minor, like 5%, 10% here. In every bull market, there's usually pullbacks, 5 to 10% corrections, perfectly okay. Tell me why. I know they're okay, but you, tell me why a 5 to 10% pullback in equity prices should not be viewed as the end of the world, but something certainly very functional, healthy for a market.
Yeah, and you have to stay long-term focused. And, you know, we have that chart in our office that shows the performance of the S&P 500 over the last 50 years. And, you know, the market continues to make new highs and it makes higher lows. So pullbacks are a healthy part of, a market that's functioning well. It's kind of like a reset of valuations that at times it's necessary. The goal always stay long-term focused.
Yeah, there's a great chart that I got a hold of from a big firm, from a relative that works at that big firm, and it shows all the noise points last year. And there were 43 different political noise points that this chart pointed out. You know, tariff day, this happened, that happened, good news, bad news. And at every point, the market sold off, but then it rallied, and it sold off, and then it rallied. And the bottom line is, the market started bottom left, and by the end of the year, it was top right. But the real point of it was, if you drew a straight line through all those noise points, it didn't matter. And we have said this over and over again in all the things we write, ignore the noise. CNBC, look, you and I listen to it all day long. We know that we have to. But like so much of it is repetitive. So much of it is just, oh my God, why am I hearing this story again? You know, pay attention to fundamentals. What's the economy doing? Are people working? Are people spending? That's what I think is important. And you've hit on it a little bit. We have about 2 minutes left. So you take one of them and give me, you know, anything that we missed or you think that's important going into next year. Lori may not ask us to be back on the show this year. So we got to take advantage of this.
This is our time.
This is our time.
Yes. So maybe just, you know, we each pointed out, you know, some things that concern us about 2026 and just, things to say the average investor should stay conscious of. But what gives you most hope, just about 2026 and kind of beyond 2026? And I always kind of think back to like some of the messages we've heard from Warren Buffett, you know, one of the greatest investors of our time. And, you know, he has such a simple message, a simple theme. So I don't know, what are your thoughts there?
I think Warren's theme is buy and hold. I think it's like Chicago voting rules, vote early and often. Invest early and often. The Trump accounts for children born last year and this year, get that $1,000 in there, add to it, call on grandparents to add to it. Invest early and often. Stick to your investment plan and watch it grow. And everybody will wind up healthy and wealthy.
And remember, I know he has always said, don't bet against America.
Right.
So I know that's one of his big messages he always tries to send.
So thanks for listening tonight. My name is Bill Henderson, along with Chris Holland. Next week, Lori will welcome Tom Garrity of Compass Point Business Strategies to discuss succession planning and how that applies in many situations. Coming up next, Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.